Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Ever feel like you're trying to walk on a floor that's constantly tilting? Like the world is changing so fast, it's hard to even get your bearings.
Yeah, that feeling of being off balance. I get it.
Oh, that's exactly the territory we're diving into today with Yumna Kassab's The Theory of Everything.
Yeah.
And fair warning, this isn't your typical novel. It's more like a collection of interconnected short stories, observations, almost like fables for the modern age. You get sharp social commentary, deeply personal moments, and this overarching sense of trying to make sense of it all.
It's fragmented, just like the way many of us experience the world right now. And that structure, that feeling of brokenness, is intentional. It's key to how Kassab gets her point across.
Definitely. So for anyone listening who loves to get deep into questions of identity, belonging, the pressures we all face, and how the heck we find meaning in a world that can feel so chaotic, well, hit that like and subscribe button, because you're in the right place.
You can find a link to the book in the description if you want to follow along.
Okay, so let's get right into it. One of the things that really struck me about Kassab's work is how she captures this sense of a world in constant flux, almost like a breakdown of everything we thought was stable, like in the game, where you're dropped into this post-war landscape.
Right, and it's not even the most devastating war, historically speaking, but it feels like a turning point.
Exactly. There's this weariness, this sense of everything repeating itself, like we're stuck in some kind of historical loop. And the way Kassab presents those classic virtues, fortitude, endurance, patience, they almost become burdens.
They're double-edged swords, because she makes you think, can you have too much fortitude? Like maybe sometimes you need to let go, adapt to change. And patience, it can be a virtue, but what if it means just enduring injustice?
That's so thought-provoking, the way she turns those ideas on their head. And then in The Breakers, she gives us this almost apocalyptic scenario of a mass prison break, over 1 million people escaping. And the thing is, the statisticians predicted it, they saw it coming, but it's like nobody listened.
And that's what's unsettling. We have all this data, all these warnings, but do we act on them? Do we even agree on what the data means?
Right. Because even in the story, you have some people witnessing the escape, and they describe it as a terrifying stampede, and others see it as people casually strolling along. It's the same event, but such different perceptions.
It makes you think about how divided we can be, even in how we see the world.
And the way she describes this fog that descends afterward, it's almost like this physical manifestation of societal failure.
Oh, that fog imagery is brilliant. It represents the confusion, the moral ambiguity, maybe even guilt that lingers after a major event. You know, like that collective unease you feel sometimes.
Totally. And this feeling of the familiar dissolving. It's not just in these huge events. In Parramatta, Jana, the main character, is walking through her own neighborhood, and she doesn't recognize the people or the places anymore.
It's disorienting, right? That feeling of being a stranger in a place you thought you knew makes you wonder what truly makes a place feel like home, especially in a world where everything's changing so rapidly.
It's like our anchors are constantly being pulled up. And then there's this quieter but equally powerful sense of time slipping away in Last Day of the 20s. That feeling of taking a photo just to prove you were there, to capture a moment before it's gone, almost a desperate act.
It's like we're all trying to hold on to these fleeting moments, these threads of clarity, as everything around us gets darker and more confusing. I think we've all felt that urge to document things out of fear they'll just disappear from our memory.
For sure. And this whole idea of a world in flux, it really ties into this larger theme of identity and belonging. What do you say? Like in 100 Points of Identity, where she takes it to a satirical extreme with these absurd requirements for proving who you are.
It's like a dystopian bureaucracy of identity, where you need the right language, the right skin tone, the right sacred text, and heaven forbid you fall outside the acceptable range for any of it.
It's brutal. It's her way of showing how much of our identity is imposed from the outside, how we get put into these boxes that we might not even fit in.
It's about the power structures that define what's acceptable, what's normal.
Right, and then how we live now. That story just nails the paradox of our digital age. We're hyper-connected through technology, but also feeling deeply alienated at the same time.
We crave community, but often end up just scrolling, comparing, worrying about what we're missing out on.
And the language. It's like we've lost the ability to truly express ourselves, to have meaningful conversations. We've traded authenticity for likes and shares.
How we live now really captures that sense of emotional distance that comes with always being on, always performing for an audience.
Absolutely. And then color coding takes this idea of societal categorization to a really uncomfortable place. The idea of literally averaging neighbors by skin tone to achieve some kind of manufactured harmony. It's presented as a solution, but it just feels so dehumanizing.
It's a chilling commentary on the dangers of forced conformity, trying to erase our differences instead of celebrating them.
It's a reminder that true unity comes from embracing our diversity, not trying to blend everyone into some kind of homogenous average.
Exactly. And then there's A Different Life, which explores that feeling of internal fragmentation many of us experience. You know, that sense of living a double life, constantly judging ourselves, never feeling fully present.
It's like we're always performing, even for ourselves.
And that constant self-monitoring can be exhausting. It keeps us from truly connecting with ourselves and with others.
So true. Now, speaking of performance, let's talk about the pressures of modern life. Stories like, on occasion of Ibrahim signing the biggest contract in the world and first sale, they paint this surreal picture of a person being completely commodified, like their whole existence becomes a product.
It's a sharp critique of celebrity culture and this idea that everything can be bought and sold, even human beings.
Ibrahim, in the story, loses all control over his image, his life. It's like he's being consumed by this machine of fame and fortune.
And it raises important questions about the true cost of success. What do we sacrifice in the pursuit of fame and wealth?
And even with all that external success, in the things we touch, Khadija, who's close to Ibrahim, still feels this profound sense of alienation. It's like his happiness exists in this separate sphere that she can't reach.
It's heartbreaking because it shows how even close relationships can suffer under the weight of external pressures. It's like they're both trapped in these different worlds, unable to bridge the gap between them.
Then there's Mother Me, which is such a raw and honest portrayal of faith and suffering. This woman is pouring her heart out in prayer, seeking solace, and when she finally reaches out for help, she's met with judgment and suspicion.
It's a powerful commentary on the hypocrisy that can exist within organized religion and how often we prioritize outward appearances over genuine compassion and understanding.
It's tragic the way she's silenced and shamed for being vulnerable. But then you have Paradise Light, which offers a more subtle form of agency. This woman is very consciously making choices about what she eats, even while being observed. It's like this quiet act of rebellion.
It's a small gesture, but it's significant. It shows how we can assert our independence, our individuality, even in subtle ways.
And then there's the chilling story, Anti-Life, which paints this dystopian picture of a world where everything is sterile and controlled, where emotions are medicated and death is simply forgotten. It's a terrifying vision of what happens when we prioritize order and control over everything else.
It's a warning about the dehumanizing effects of technology and the dangers of suppressing our natural instincts and emotions.
Moving on to the theme of social commentary and power dynamics, The Gangs shows us these acts of seemingly pointless destruction. But there's this underlying feeling that they're not really getting their message across. It's like their anger is misdirected.
They're lashing out, but they haven't articulated what they're fighting for, what they're hoping to change. And that lack of focus can be just as destructive as the violence itself.
Then in The Jumps, Kassab takes us to this dark place where suicide has become almost normalized. There's this guard station to try and prevent people from jumping, but it's clear it's just a temporary measure.
And the reactions of the people who witness it, they range from grief to morbid curiosity to just plain apathy. It's a chilling portrayal of how we can become desensitized to suffering, especially when it becomes commonplace.
Handbook to the Far Right is a very direct and disturbing look at the mechanics of extremist ideologies. The way she lays out the characteristics of nationalism, the creation of an enemy, the all-consuming nature of the cause, it's scary how recognizable it all is.
It's important to understand how these ideologies operate, how they prey on fear and insecurity to recruit followers.
Absolutely. And Education as Consumption really hits hard with this depiction of how unequal access to education perpetuates societal inequality. The line about children being born equal until the world sorts them into piles is just brutal in its honesty.
It's a powerful indictment of a system that treats education as a commodity rather than a right. And it raises the question of how can we create a more just society if we're not giving everyone an equal opportunity to learn and grow?
Then there's Poverty, which uses satire to expose the paranoia and dehumanization that can result from extreme wealth disparity. These wealthy characters are terrified of any contact with the poor, resorting to these desperate measures to keep themselves separate.
It's a commentary on the fear and isolation that can come with privilege, the way it distorts our perceptions and makes it difficult to empathize with those who are different from us.
Shifting gears to relationships and family dynamics, an incident in a house gives us this touching glimpse into Ibrahim's fierce love for his daughter Aisha and his struggle against those societal expectations, especially around gender roles in sports.
And Khadija, she offers this contrasting calm, this more pragmatic approach to navigating those challenges. They make such an interesting pair. You can see how their different personalities complement each other.
It's a reminder that there's no one right way to parent or to navigate those societal pressures. What matters is the love and support we provide for our children.
Exactly. And the matriarch is such a subtle but powerful piece about the unspoken power dynamics within families. Mahmood, the main character, he's constantly serving his wife's mother, but there's barely any acknowledgement, just this quiet expectation of service.
It's a masterclass in showing, not telling. You can feel the tension in their interactions, even though very little is actually said. It's like those silent power struggles we all witness in families sometimes.
It's those unspoken rules and expectations that can shape relationships, sometimes for generations.
Shame is such a raw and fragmented exploration of desire and intimacy, particularly from a woman's perspective. The repetition of the word shame throughout the piece, it's like this heavyweight bearing down on her.
It's a visceral portrayal of the internal conflict and societal pressures women face when it comes to expressing their sexuality.
And then this terrible pain at home presents this heart-wrenching conflict. Jamel is torn between caring for his sick sister and the pressure to engage with these huge global issues that are happening in the world.
It highlights the tension between our personal responsibilities and our awareness of wider suffering. It's like, how do we reconcile these two things? Where do we focus our energy when we can't possibly do it all?
It's a dilemma I think a lot of us can relate to. Now, moving into loss and memory, Body Count confronts us with these anonymous bodies, these unexplained disappearances, and this haunting image of an unidentified woman in the morgue. It's a stark reminder of the human cost of violence and neglect.
It's about how easy it is for individuals to become just numbers, to be forgotten, especially in the face of overwhelming tragedy.
And The Past, A Heavy Weight on My Heart, explores that feeling of being tethered to our past, no matter how hard we try to move on.
Farah, the main character, she's trapped in this cycle of fatalism, convinced that the past is always going to dictate her future.
And even though Jamel eventually leaves, you can feel that connection to his family and his history still pulling at him.
It's like that saying, you can't run away from yourself. Exactly. Our past shapes us in ways we might not even realize. And then there's Crumbling, this recurring nightmare about a hotel falling apart. It's such a powerful metaphor for societal decay or maybe even personal anxieties.
That imagery is so vivid, so unsettling, you can almost feel the walls closing in.
It's a reminder of the fragility of everything, you know, how easily things can fall apart.
And then finally, by that staircase, she smiles and shuts out the world. This story centers on Lucille, a famous actress who's staying at the hotel. And the staff, they're constantly watching her, speculating about her life, but she's so guarded, so careful about her public image.
It's a commentary on the nature of fame, how it can be both isolating and seductive. The way she smiles and shuts out the world, it's both alluring and tragic.
It makes you think about all the things we hide behind our public facades, the real stories we keep hidden from the world.
And how those secrets can sometimes eat away at us, even when we're surrounded by adoring fans.
Well, that's Yumna Kassab's The Theory of Everything. It's a book that really stays with you long after you finish it.
It's a powerful and unsettling reflection on the complexities of our modern world and the challenges of staying connected to ourselves and each other.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this deep dive. Was there a story or an idea that really resonated with you? Let us know in the comments below and tell us, what are your own theories about these fragmented narratives?
And as you go about your day, consider this. In a world that's constantly changing and bombarding us with information, how do you create your own personal theory of everything? How do you make sense of it all and hold on to what truly matters?
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in the next deep dive.